Hi, I'm Rhonda and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Rhonda.
Well, you know, next week I'm going on 2 years.
And right on. Woo-woo!
Round up. I'm so excited to have been on the committee this year and to be involved with the Roundup Committee. It's just been a wonderful experience. And with that, I don't know how I ended up being on the Speaker Committee. it was because my sponsor was the chairperson. I think that's kind of how it happened. I don't remember volunteering. I'm really happy. a gal from my home group, when we were searching for a speaker, a banquet speaker, I wanted somebody dynamic. I wanted to have somebody larger than life. You know, you just want that something wow. And then Bev said, all you have to do is pray, Rhonda. So I prayed. And next thing I know, a gal from my home group, out in Redcliffe, I'll put a little plug out there, Cliffhangers. That's on Thursday night. Elizabeth Ann gave me a couple of names from Vancouver. And the one that felt was right on Ron. And she said, he's on Facebook, and this, look him up on Facebook. So I did. And I sent him a friend request, and he asked me, you know, how I knew of him. And I said, Elizabeth M. from Vancouver gave me the name. And right away, this whole world on Facebook that I didn't even know was out there for AA, you know, he had Love and Service Group, the Vancouver, his Vancouver group, and then his own Right on Ron, and Ron M., he's also known. It was just amazing to have this. So we sat down, Peggy and I, one afternoon. It was May 19th, I remember that afternoon. And we listened to Happy D, one of his speeches that he has on there. And this fella has a passion for AA. And I have a passion for AA. And he had all this love in his voice, and I just smiled from ear to ear as we were listening to him. Peggy and I knew it, you know. It's going to be the guy. Of course, if he accepts. And we hadn't ran it by Derek yet. So I sent a shout out to Ron to see if he'd be interested. And he was. And he was so grateful to even be asked. You know, the thank yous and the gratitude you get from him is just kind of overwhelming. And so I said, you know, I'll discuss it with Derek and we'll get back to you. And then I discussed it with Derek, and he said, you got Ron? I know right on Ron. So then after that, I ended up phoning Ron that Sunday. And wow, as I'm speaking to this man, I just had a grin on my face at the love he has for this program is unbelievable. And I have such an amazing love for this program because I have my love back. Thanks to you people and to this program of aid. So, without further ado, I would like to ask you to help me welcome Right on Ron from Vancouver.
Hi, everybody. Ron, alcoholic. I don't think I'm going to need that. If you guys can't hear me, maybe you'll, I think you'll be able to hear me. Anyways, I'm Ron and I'm an alcoholic and thanks you guys. And thanks for inviting me here. And I would like to thank the committee. I can't say enough about Rhonda, Peggy, Derek. Oh, who am I missing? Bev, I'm sorry, and Beverly, and the whole committee. Just thank you for inviting me out here. I'm just an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November the 3rd, 1988. And I sobered up at 24 years old. But I'll just tell you just a little bit what happened before that. Can you guys hear me in the back? Okay, good, good. So what happened was this, I started drinking when I was 13 years old, and I don't like the drunk logs either, but I should qualify that I am an alcoholic. And so I started drinking when I was 13 years old, and right away I knew something was wrong. You know, it gave me this, you know, just like the big book says, that sense of ease and comfort. And it gave it to me right away, but it pretty much never left me once I got it. You know, and that's how my journey actually started when I was around 13, 14 years old. And what happened was is when I was 14, I started a job, and it was working at in the ports of Vancouver. So I'm a longshoreman. So everything you hear about longshoremen are true, right? You've heard it, stealing and drinking and containers and, you know, ships full of booze. I couldn't believe it because I already started drinking. Right? And then I started this man's job when I was like 14 years old. And I quit my paper route to be a longshoreman. And what a longshoreman is we unload ships. And we drive great big forklifts and bulldozers. And oh my God. It was like a kid's world, but in a man's world is what happened for me. So that was my job. I was 14 and I started there and I started working and I'd be working on ships, and I'd be going down below on the ship, and it'd be filled with booze. It'd be filled with, like, vodka, and it'd be filled with beer cases, and that's how they used to do it years ago before the containers. And I actually started that early, you know. So I would work on this, and I can remember working these ships, and I can remember drinking lots. And the drinking just never stopped for me. Like, you know, it was like I would start like 8 o'clock in the morning, 14, 15 years old. I would start and it just wouldn't end. I'd be drinking through the whole shift at work and I'd go home. And, you know, I can remember a lot of times I'd be working like on ships and containers. And I can remember all the longshoremen would buy big jackets, like great big jackets, because they could steal stuff. Right. So, you know, and so I'm like, oh, that's perfect. So I would be going home, right, with all these bottles, you know, and I'd sound like a Christmas tree, you know. So it wasn't good. Let me tell you, it wasn't good. You know, it's good for the alcoholic, but I didn't even know what an alcoholic was. But that was me at the beginning. So that's how I grew up. I grew up working the docks and just continued to drink. I got into, you know, other than working, I got into bigger things like bigger forklifts and bulldozers and driving cranes on the waterfront. And that's kind of what I do today. You know, I've been a longshoremer for 35 years. But back then, you know, I didn't know anything about being an alcoholic. I didn't know. All I just knew was I drank a lot. And I couldn't stop. And it just continued that way until near the end, until when it just continued. And, you know, it's funny. I can remember my drinking, and I can remember going to the bar. And I'm the guy at the bar. We had an hour lunch back then. And I'm the guy who'd be drinking with all the guys. And I was like 15, 16. And I was getting kicked out of most of the bars because I was underage. But a lot of times I could go. And I was one of those guys who always made bets. You know, I don't know if you guys ever made the bets, but when a bunch of guys get together, we make a bet. I'm going to drink pints. And I'd end up betting, look, I can drink 10 pints in 1 hour. And I'd go back to work. And I'd drink like 9. I'd be pissed drunk, right? I'd grab more booze. I'd go back to work. So this is a really good thing that I found Alcoholics Anonymous when I did, because it wasn't good. You know, this was my life every single day, and my work was every single day, and it just got really, really bad, and I didn't really know what to do, so I asked for some help, you know, when I got to 24, and it was around March in 1988 where I knew I needed some help. And I knew things were really, really getting bad about March in 1988. And I was still working, and It wasn't good. I couldn't stop. I drank. I puked. I was sick. I was sick all the time. I was like about 110 pounds, and I was dying. I was dying from something I didn't even know I was dying from. So, you know, and every day I'd wake up, and I might sound really, really grateful today, but I wasn't really, really grateful before I got here. And I was really dying as the dying can get. Anyways, around close to November, I did sober up. And November the 3rd, I sobered up. But I'll tell you what happened November the 2nd. As I was drinking, and there was a bunch of us drinking, and there was beer bottles everywhere, empties. And I was drinking with a bunch of guys. And I knew at that point, that night, after drinking, that last night, I knew that I needed help or I'm going to die. I knew this. It was that bad. I was pissing, and I was just doing, bodily functions weren't even working any longer at that point. And I was like yellow, and I was shaking all the time, and I'm a drunk, and I didn't even know what a drunk was, but I'm going to get into that. So I left there that night, and I said I needed help, and that was November the 2nd. Well, November the 3rd, I phoned my union, and I asked them for help. And I said, look, I need some help. Oh, no, November the 2nd, I called, and I asked for some help. And I drank that day. And the guy who was on the other end of the phone, he said, I'll help you tomorrow. But he says, can you stay sober just today? I'm like, that's a stupid question. I said, of course I can stay sober just for today. But I said, that's the most stupidest thing I've ever heard. Right? Why are you asking me to just stay sober just for today? I'm like, that, like I did. I was really pissed off. Like he would say something so stupid to me. But he said, if you can stay sober today, I'm going to help you tomorrow. I'm like, fantastic. See you tomorrow. So what happened was, is I sobered up. And the next day was my very first day of sobriety, November the 3rd, 1988. And you know, this guy came from work. And he came to pick me up, and what happened? He says, oh, you're going to go someplace, and it's called Detox. And I'm like, oh, fantastic. I said, that's great, Detox. I'm like, great. I said, do they have swimming pools? And he said, no. I said, do they have tennis courts? They said, no. And I'm like, oh, what? Well, what do you do in this Detox? They said, oh, well, you just hang out, and you smoke cigarettes and stuff. I'm like, okay, I could do that. Okay. I said, do they drink there? And they said, no, there's no drinking. I said, okay, I'll try this. I went to Detox and I hated it. I did. I really hated it. I thought I was going to a country club. It was not a country club. Believe me, if you've never been to Detox, it's not a country club. But back then you could smoke. So I smoked, and I smoked lots. So I went to Detox, and I hated it there, and I was ready to leave after a couple of days. Like, this was the most stupidest thing. It was Detox, like, you know. And then I saw people when I was there in the smoker's room. People were coming back, and they're, like, happy. They went to Happy Land, and they came back. And I'm like, where did you guys go? And they said, AA or something. And I'm like, what's AA? What? How come you guys are all happy? They came from Happy Land. And they're all happy. They came back and they're all smiling. And I'm like, you guys are nuts. I'm like, because I didn't know nothing. I absolutely knew nothing about Detox. I knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm stuck in some, ugh. It was worse. Well, I've never been to jail or other than the drunk tank once. But anyway, so I'm stuck there, and there's all these happy people, and it just pissed me off. I wasn't right on Ron when I first came to AA. I wasn't. Wasn't. Really. So anyways, so I'm in Detox, and I phone up the guy who got me into this stupid mess. After a couple of days, 3 days, I'm phoning him up, and his name's Damon. And he ended up being my sponsor. But I phoned up Damon. And I said, this is crazy. I said, I'm leaving here. This is the most stupidest place I've ever been to. They do nothing other than smoke here. He said, well, and lucky and fortunate for me that this guy, Damon, had access to the Detox because of through the work, he could come in and out of Detox. I've never heard that before. But he actually came to pick me up out of Detox and take me out of Detox. I'm like, he says, I'm coming to get you. I'm like, fantastic. Should I pack my bag? And he said, no, just leave it. So he came to pick me up. And where he took me was he took me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was an 8:30 meeting, and I'll never forget it. They have an 8:30 meeting there, and they have an 11 o'clock meeting there. So he had access to get me out of detox, take me to this AA meeting, him and I. And I can remember sitting in the very back, and I can remember this very first speaker I ever heard in Alcoholics Anonymous. He was a Russian guy, and he says, "Oh, we drink vodka like you drink water." And I'm like, wow, if this guy can stay sober, anybody can stay sober. I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. I fell in love with it. And maybe that's not your story, but that's my story. What you guys gave me. You guys gave me something so important. You guys gave me hope. When I was sitting in detox, I had nothing. And to give an alcoholic hope is giving them the world. You guys gave me the world. And I couldn't believe it. I was super happy. I love the AA meeting. I even asked them, I said, "Hey, can we go to another one?" So we had a privilege to go to the 11 o'clock meeting. I'm going back to detox at 1 o'clock in the morning, 1:30 in the morning, and I'm super happy, super grateful, because now I found something. I found something in my life that I was always searching for, and that was help, and that was hope, and I never knew any of that. All I knew how to do was drink, and drink lots. I knew how to get drunk. I was perfect at it. I could drink anyone, with anyone, anytime. I got kicked out of many places, but I knew how to drink because I was a little loud. Got kicked out of everywhere. And I still get kicked out of places, but I'm kicked out sober now. Just too loud. Even at a hockey game. Oh, my God. Anyways, so what happened was is I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. I did my few other days in detox, and I left detox, and my whole life changed, you know. But it wasn't really, really positive. You know, I was happy that I was sober. I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous, but, you know, I'm still really, really sick. And I don't know if you guys know what happens to an alcoholic who doesn't do the steps, but they're really, really sick. And that was me, you know. When I talk in Alcoholics Anonymous, either you really love me or you don't. Really, you either love me or you hate me. And the ones that hate me are the ones that don't do the steps. So if you love me, you're doing pretty good. You know, I can remember a guy talking, I'm just going to just skip by this. I can remember a guy in Alcoholics Anonymous. "You have to love me." That's how we started the meeting, a circuit speaker. He says, "You have to love me." And I'm in the audience, and I'm like, "No, I don't like this guy. I don't love him." And that's how we started it off. He says, "You have to love me, and I'll tell you why you have to love me. It's because resentment is the number one offender that destroys more alcoholics than anything else. And if you got a resentment, you could drink. And if you're going to drink, you're probably going to die. You have to love me." I'm like, I love this guy. I love him. I love this guy. That ended up being my second sponsor. But anyways, let's get back to the beginning. So anyways, I fell in love with AA, and this guy kept picking me up. That's all he did is he picked me up. I didn't know anything. He said, "Okay, I'll see you tomorrow." Okay, good. So we would go to a meeting. Next day, "I'll pick you up, go to another meeting." You know, I ended up getting into, I actually got into the service right away in Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to the jails. I went to the hospitals. I was just brought there. It wasn't my idea, right? I got brought to service, you know, and I got to a home group. I belonged to a men's meeting. The very first 5 years, we had a men's meeting, and there was like, I don't know, 40 guys, and it was called the Wine and Snivelers, and we would throw around baby bottles for the guys who were upset and crying about their girlfriends leaving. We'd throw them like a little baby bottle or, you know, like a little baby soother, right? And we're talking like this guy, Tiny, was huge, right? Yeah, so there was Tiny, and there was my sponsor, Damon, and, you know, and this is what my sobriety was like, was just getting somebody loving me enough. You know, it talks about we and lean on me. Well, you know, I had to lean on somebody I didn't know and do things I didn't understand, and it completely changed my life. All this guy did was he loved me. That was it. I kind of wish he would have gotten me into the steps, but I'll talk about those. So anyways, I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's been about a couple of months, and I love AA. Wow, 2 months. I'm like, I hear sponsorship. I'm like, oh, really? I'm doing service. I'm not doing the steps, but, you know, I hear sponsorship. And I'm like, I want to be a sponsor. Right? Right? Of course you do. If you're new, you want to be a sponsor too. So what happened was, is I started sponsoring people in Alcoholics Anonymous at 2 months. And did I know the steps? Absolutely not. But nothing will push you further and faster to the steps than sponsoring somebody. And that's exactly what happened to me. So my sponsor came up and he says, can we do step one? I said, you know what? I said, just open up the book and I'll get right back to you, okay? Open up the book and just read it. Get right back to you. So I'm like, power steps. And oh my God, it was crazy. And I have some great sponsees today. Wonderful. Some stayed, some didn't. But my life is surrounded by sobriety today. And so I ended up getting into the 12 steps. And I have to talk about the steps because I'm just passionate about AA and I love the big book. So anything you hear me say tonight, and if it doesn't have to do with the 12 steps that are from the big book, don't use it. Okay? Don't use it. Probably about 98% of the stuff I say is going to be from the big book. And it's going to explain the steps because I didn't know anything. All I wanted was to be loved when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was fantastic. I have hope. But you can't give somebody willingness. And I needed the willingness and I had the willingness and I'm ready. Let's do it. So, you know, I ended up getting to the first step and, you know, the first step, I did it wrong for a lot of years, the first step. I wrote down my life story and stuff like this. Had nothing to do with anything. It had nothing to do with step one, right? Has to do with step four, but it doesn't have nothing to do with step one. I had to know what happened with step one. But let me just tell you a little bit of the history in AA. Is Abby. Abby was Bill's sponsor. So I know just a little bit about the history. And what happened was this, Abby that day, when he knocked on the door and Bill Wilson answered, they ended up sitting down at that table and they were drinking and Abby started talking about the 12 steps to Bill. And Bill's like, what is this guy talking about? But they used to drink together. Abby, his sponsor and stuff, they used to drink together. Well, what happened was, is Bill didn't stay sober and he was drinking across the table, as we all know. But I love in the story, Bill's story, and it's on page 11, because there's a reason I'm telling you this, is where I'm going with this. He says there's something, as he's sitting across the table, he wrote about it. And he says there was something that happened in the human heart that did the impossible. And that's where I'm going. Like, Bill Wilson knew there was something that transformed in Abby that happened in his heart that changed everything in Abby. And it's true. That's exactly what happened. So, you know, let's get to the first part. And, you know, and even just before, I'm skipping all around the place, but, you know, we talk about this mental obsession. This mental obsession of the mind and this allergy, you know, and I didn't know an allergy was, I have an abnormal reaction to alcohol. That's what an allergy is. And I have this. And I have this obsession of mine that happens before I have a drink. My mind goes crazy. My mind actually convinces me to drink when it's not okay to drink. It's crazy. And I didn't realize that the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. And that's on page 23, right? So I didn't know that. I didn't realize what an alcoholic was. Okay, it's someone who has these two symptoms, right? Alcoholism has to have symptoms. And the two symptoms are actually three symptoms, but I'll get to that. Is the obsession of the mind happens before I pick up that drink. And I have this allergy that kicks in. Once I have a drink, I can't stop. I can't control it. But what's really, really going on with the alcoholic? Like, really, what's going on? And this is all part of step one. Is I have a spiritual malady, right? And I didn't realize it. Right? And my solution for all these years of growing up and me not realizing it is my solution was to drink. Regardless of what happens and how I felt, I had to drink. That was my solution. So I didn't know that the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind. So the main problem is my thinking. That's the problem. I didn't know that. I had to study the big book long enough to figure this out and to understand it and, you know, to go to many step groups and really understand what this big book was telling me. Main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. So the problem is my thinking. And I didn't realize that. See, what happened was is Bill and Bob, remember that day they got together? Remember that they got together that day and Dr. Bob was underneath the table. And what happened was is Bill Wilson went to the bar. He was going to drink. And then he thought, oh, my God, I better phone somebody and help somebody, help others, or I'm going to drink. Remember in the Mayflower? Well, what happened was, I know I'm skipping around, but it gets to my point. Is what happened is Bill Wilson was going to drink. So what he decided to do is he ended up going to the phone booth in the Mayflower, and he ended up getting, somehow he got a list of 10 names. Well, what happened was is he went through all the names, and the very bottom one was Henrietta. Well, Henrietta, he thought he actually knew Henrietta, but he didn't. Well, what happened was he phoned up Henrietta and said, hi, I'm looking for a drunk. Can you help me? Well, I kind of know somebody. His name's Dr. Bob, and, you know, maybe you can help him. And what Bill was given that day, like before that day was set up, is Bill used to go around AA and said, get down on your hands and knees, pray. And it really didn't work. It didn't. So Dr. Silkworth, Bill goes back to the hospital. So I'm just telling you a little bit of history. So Bill goes back to the hospital. His doctor is Dr. Silkworth. Dr. Silkworth says, hey, look, why don't you explain to the alcoholic what the problem is, right? Explain to them that their mind is lying to them. That's the main problem. They have this allergy. Bill Wilson says, it's an allergy that will condemn you to die. That's what Bill says, right? And he's not kidding. So instead of going saying, okay, get down on your hands and knees and pray, he says, why don't you go and give them the problem? Give them what's wrong with them. Bill says, okay. So he phones Henrietta. They get the name Dr. Bob. They go, and he couldn't see Dr. Bob that day because he's drunk. He's underneath the table. But they have plans to go to the next day. So Bill Wilson goes to see Dr. Bob the next day, as the story goes, right? And I don't know if you know the story, but what happens is Dr. Bob was really, really spiritual. He was. And what happened was is Dr. Bob knew about the steps, but he knew about the steps from the Oxford group. And before the Oxford group was the Washingtonians. And the Oxford group had, like, I think they had the 6 steps back then. But they didn't know what the problem was. So Dr. Bob was still drunk. He was always getting drunk. Anyways, Bill met with Bob that day, Dr. Bob. And Dr. Bob said, I'll give this guy who's coming, Bill Wilson, I'm going to give him 10 minutes or something of my time. That's it. I'm going to listen to this guy and see what he says. He's a doctor. And he's drunk. He can't stay sober. Well, what happened was that day they got together and they talked all day. And what did they talk about? They talked about the problem. They talked about this allergy. They talked about this abnormal reaction that we get. Look, when I drink, and remember those 10 pints that I drink at lunchtime? I could just keep going and going. I even took a beer back to work. I have the allergy. Only the alcoholics have the allergy. But never in my life, even still today, have I ever sat down and drank 10 bottles of water. I don't have an allergy for water, right? No, I don't, right? So, but what happens is if you're an alcoholic, then that's where we can stand together on this, is I have this allergy. So he explained this to Dr. Baum, and he's like, wow. And it just completely changed the world. That's exactly what happened. And, you know, they ended up working together, and Dr. Bob ended up staying sober. I think he went out one time or something. He went for a business trip, and he came back, and he stayed sober ever since. So it brings me back to the first step. And the first step is we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. That powerlessness is I can't control. See, I didn't know about this obsession of the mind, that the main problem of the alcoholic is the mind. I didn't understand that, but I do today. Right? And I understand the allergy also, right? That I can't control it. And it tells you, like, at the end of once you've done your step one, before you even can get to step two, it asks you 2 questions. It says, can you control the amount that you can take? And can you stop entirely? That's impossible if you're an alcoholic. And if you think that you can do it, the big book doesn't say stop drinking. The big book says go up to the closest bar room and try some controlled drinking if you can do it. I hate saying that, but it's true. If you can control it, you might not be an alcoholic. But if you can't control it, and let me talk about what controlling it is. Because people test me. You know, I got a lot of years and people test me and they want to test me. I'm like, okay. And they said, talk about this controlling it. I can control it. I said, no, you can't. If you're an alcoholic, you can't control it. We can stand together on this step. We have a common problem. We have a common solution. Common solution is God. And the common problem is we all have this allergy. And it doesn't happen in normal people. It only happens in alcoholics, right? My brother's a heavy drinker. He stops after like 8 or 6. Well, how stupid is that? He starts feeling sick and he stops. That's my starting point, right? I'm like, I'm ready, right? 6 beers, sure, let's do it, right? I'm ready to go. Anyways, I have this allergy. And like Bill says, it'll condemn you to die. And before you get on to the second step, again, can you control it? And let me just finish off with this. This part is try some controlled drinking and see if you can do it. Like, I'm not telling anybody here. Let's try this with people who are out there who think they can handle it. So what I would do and what I have done is I've sat at the bar with them and they've drank. And all of a sudden, I take their drink away from them. At any time. Now, you really know who the alcoholics are, right? Right? My brother would look at me, and he'd look at me, and he'd like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm just taking away your beer. And he would say, yeah, okay. Maybe I'm not feeling good anyways. You try that with an alcoholic, you're like killing. You'd be like stabbing them or something, right? And an alcoholic will fight to the bitter end. Right? So try some controlled drinking. Don't try it around me because I'll take it away. Right? When you at least expect it. That's the alcoholic. That was me. Okay, so, you know, I needed to know what the problem was, and that's the obsession of the mind. That's the allergy, and some water. Thank you. Oh, good. Oh, good. Oh, okay, here's the water bit, right? Hey? Never have I sat and drank 10 bottles of water at once in an hour. So anyways, so the first step is the problem. And the problem is my mind will completely convince me that it's okay to drink when it's not okay to drink. And that's around page 25. And it's probably the scariest part. And it tells you that. It tells you that you're going to think that you're going to drink. I just don't know the exact thing. I don't have my big book here with me. But it tells you that you're going to think that you can drink like other people. And it'll lead you to insanity or death. And it's true. So the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind. The main problem of the alcoholic is his thinking. Right? So let's get to the second step. And the second step, believe it or not, is the solution. And I know you're thinking, what? But it really, really is. Because I didn't realize that. Like, all the steps bring us to the solution. But I need a new solution. If you're powerless over alcohol, you need some sort of power. Because I'm powerless. I can't do this. See, step one isn't good news. Step one, if you know you're an alcoholic, you're screwed. Means you can't drink. It means if you drink, you're going to die. Or kill everybody around you, or it's really, really not going to be good. It's really bad news. So it brings you to the second step, and the second step is the solution. And it talks about came to believe that a power greater than yourself could restore you to sanity. But what it tells me on page 25 is I'm not going to tell you who God is, and I'm not, and I can't do that. But I can tell you where God is through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't know this. And I'm going to tell you exactly where God is. And that's why the second step is the solution. And the second step in page 25, and this is in the big book. I'm not making this stuff up. And it says, our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a place which is indeed miraculous. See, God's within me. God's in my heart. And I didn't know that. And I didn't realize that. I had to really study this book to understand that. On page 55, it says, deep down in every man, woman, and child, deep down in every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of God. So God's within me. But how can God within me reach you if your mind's in the way? Right? So step two really has to do with having an open mind. Right? Because how can my heart reach your heart is if your mind's in the way. So if you can keep your mind open just long enough for my heart to reach your heart, you're doing pretty good. Right? And
set your water on.
Oh, good. Thank you. And so the second step is the solution. And at the back of the big book, Spiritual Experiences, I heard it today about spiritual experiences. But at the bottom of the page of Spiritual Experiences, it says this. It says, our members have tapped an unexpected inner resource, which they presently use as a power greater than themselves. That's great news. That's great news. I do not need, like, to be phoning my sponsor 20 times a day. Oh, you know, I don't have to rely on that human power. God's within me. God has always told me the truth. And I've heard it all through this weekend about, you know, oh, I have this feeling and stuff like that. That's God. That's God. I know how everybody here sobered up. I know how you sobered up. What happened was, is God touched your heart long enough to get you into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's exactly what happened. And what happens is okay, so the problem is my thinking, and the solution is God. Praying, I pray, right? I talk to God. God's within me, in my heart, has always told me the truth. It works. I read the book, it works. And I couldn't believe it. I'm like, ah, oh, that's fantastic news that I got God within me that always tells me the truth, this tells me the truth, this always lies to me. But I'm going to talk about the lying later, about the mind. And it will continue to lie to you. It will continue to lie to you until you get to steps 10 and 11. And then they tell you, by then, they tell you, your thinking is now in line with God. We want you to think, go out there and live life. And, you know, but we're still at step two. So you would think, okay, we're at step two. God's within me. Our Creator has entered into our hearts, lives in a place which is indeed miraculous. This is fantastic news. Brings me to step three. Step three was really, really easy for me because I knew that if I'm listening to me, it's not going to go over well, right? So I said, made a decision. Oh, I made a decision. Yep, yep, yep. Will in life? Sure, I can do this. I have no other choice. Why do I want to run my life to the ground? I don't want to run the show. I don't. I want to listen to what God's saying. I want to listen to what your heart is telling me. And I want to keep an open mind. And I get those answers. And I get to the truth. And that's what we're here for. Right? We need to remove these blocks that are blocking us from God. That's why we do the rest of the work. So, you know what? I had no problem with step three. Turning my will and my life over to God, you know, because I knew where God was, and I pray to God, and it works, right? Why would I do this? Why would I get in the way of that mess with my thinking? So, but you would think, okay, so now I know what the problem is, and I know what the solution is. You would think that you can stay, that's it. I got it happening, and you will have it happening too. And you would think you're never going to have another drink for the rest of your life, but you're wrong. Right? That's only the first three steps. You're going to drink. The book tells me you're going to drink. I'll tell you why you're going to drink. It's because I need to remove these blocks that are blocking me from God. And what are these blocks? They're my defects of character. Right? This is why we do the 4 to 12. Right? So I'm at step 4. And I need to deal with these resentments. They're the number one offense. Two things nearly sent Bill Wilson back out drinking. One was resentment. Do you know what the second one was? Self-pity. They killed him. Self-pity is poison for an alcoholic. So if you're ever around self-pity, better leave there real quick because it's poison for the alcoholic. Right? And those are the two things that nearly sent Bill Wilson back out drinking. So I need to do this inventory, and maybe I'll just use myself as an example of how we do this and how I've learned to do a step four, just so you understand or whatever. You might like it or not. Take it or leave it. But anyways, so I get really, really resentful, and I'm going to use me. I don't like this guy. His name's Right On Ron. Okay, and why don't I like him? It's because he's loud. Right? Perfect example. So let's just go with that. I hate this guy. Don't want to hear him. Don't like him. He's loud. Perfect. Okay. And so I have to go why, the resentment and the why. And then I have to go like, so how does it affect me? Well, it affects my personal relationship with Ron and, you know, and I'm just using me or you as an example. So this affects me. It affects my personal relationship with Ron. He's loud, whatever. So I need to, and I have a list to pick between, right? I have the list between the prides, the self-esteem, personal relationship, sex relationship, security, ambitions. So it's some of those that affects me with this loud guy. Don't like him. Loud, don't like him. So the big book says at that point, that's as far as any of us ever gotten, you know? So I'm pissed off at my mom. Because she doesn't give me money, whatever the case might be. How does it affect? Oh, it affects my personal relationship. Okay, but that's as far as we all get. Big Book tells me that. And do you know what happens to probably about 80% of people? They go back out drinking after step four. Do you know why? It's because that's all they do, right? The Big Book says that's all you do, but you need to go further. Let me go a little further, that I found this just a few years ago reading the Big Book. And I've done this for years. I started sponsoring people at 2 months, but I keep reading it, and I keep helping people through the steps, and I keep trying to understand what this Big Book is telling me. My sponsor told me that you can't make any mistakes. Your only mistake is to drink. But he's wrong. The Big Book tells me that I can make mistakes. And it has to do with step four. So now I have to go further. I'm pissed off at this guy. Now I have to go further. And what happens is that the Big Book says that you have to go further. This is exactly what it says. It says, putting out our minds, putting out the wrongs others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had we been? Selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. I need to look at my mistakes. Let's forget about Ron. Let's forget about Mom. Let's forget about the resentment because it has nothing to do with them. But I didn't know that. I was always resentful at everything and everyone and you name it, and I was resentful. But I had to, what it says is that we have to just leave that now and we need to go further. I need to know what my mistakes are. What is my mistake with Ron? And it tells me it's one of the four defects of character. It's either selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. Right? So, you know, so let me ask you a question. And I ask a lot of people this when I go through the steps. Is it a mistake to be frightened? Yes or no? What? Is it a mistake to be frightened? Yes, it is. The Big Book says right here, let me read it again. Putting out the wrongs others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had we been? Selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. It's a mistake to be frightened because God doesn't want you frightened, right? And this is why we're doing this work. So I am frightened at that point, but it's a mistake. The Big Book's telling me it's a mistake. I'm going with what the book says. Okay, So now you're stealing from 7-Eleven. Let's say you're stealing from 7-Eleven and you're a robber, whatever. And I've heard all kinds of resentments and stuff. So you steal from 7-Eleven, you stole something and stuff. And okay, and you've closed that part. And now we're doing my part of the step four. And where am I? What is my fault in this? Not my fault. What is my mistake in this? And I know what you're thinking is my mistake would be is I'm dishonest. And you're right. But I need to go further than that. I need to know why are you dishonest. And a lot of people just stick with that. Oh, you know, I'm just dishonest. I'm just dishonest. But I need to know why are you dishonest. And that's where I get my defects of character from. Why are you dishonest? Because you're lazy. Because you're inconsiderate if you're robbing a bank or robbing a 7-Eleven. Right? Let's say you don't like the loud guy. What is that? You're judging me. Right? This is where we get our defects of character from. But I have to know what my mistakes are. And I got four main defects of character. But I need to know why. I want to know why don't you like your mom? Right? I want to know that. Well, because, you know, maybe I've been dishonest. Okay, I know you've been dishonest. But why have you been dishonest? Okay, maybe I've been inconsiderate with my mom. Okay? Maybe I've been mean. You know, maybe I've been, you know, and this is where we get our defects of character from. So it brings us to step five. And step, oh, no, no, sorry, we're still at step four. So that just deals with the resentments. So there's another part in the big book right after that on page 68. And it talks about fear. Oh, Jesus. 44 minutes already. Okay, so, and it talks about our fears. And this is the second list that we have to do. And a lot of people figure, I guess, we do our fears in our step four. And we do if they're connected with a resentment. Like if you're afraid of somebody beating you up, that would be a fear. And you would deal with that in your resentment. But the big book says we have fear. We have fear. And why? Well, there's actually a solution at the bottom of the page. There's actually a solution for the fear. And I didn't realize that. But the fear, the solution to the fear is this. It says, so I have a fear. I need to know why. And I need to know what the solution is. Here's the solution. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention what he would have us be. That's the solution. Look what it says right after that. It says, so my fear solution is I need to direct my attention to what God would have me be. Okay, I'm afraid to swim. I'm just going to pray. Nope, I'm going to drown. I got money problems. I'm going to save. Nope, I'm still going to be broke. You know, I have these fears. You know, so I need to direct my attention to what God would have us be. And what God's telling me is you need to get off of your butt and you need to put some action into it because faith without works is dead, okay? And that's, they mentioned that three times in the big book. So I need to have faith. I need to know what the fear is, why, and I need to go with the solution. I need to write that down. I need to know because I'll give you an example, like swimming. If swimming, I'm going to drown. But what would God tell me to do? I need to direct my attention what God would have me do. Swimming lessons. I'd go swimming lessons, right? And that's what I would do. I'll tell you a couple other ones that I hear all the time about intimacy and about money. I always thought fear of money, broke, right? Everybody knows that. I didn't know what the solution was. And I always thought the solution was to work more. So I'm a longshoreman and I work. And so I quit kind of being a longshoreman and I became a boss, a foreman. And I tried that for a year, hated it, but I made twice the amount of money. I was still broke. And, you know, so why was I still broke? I didn't really know what the real solution was. And the real solution wasn't to make more money. It was to save money. And I didn't realize that. And once you get the solution to a fear, you can walk right through it. Intimacy. I have fear. Not I don't, but other people might, and a lot of people do. And so I'm going to help you here. Intimacy, okay? And why is because, you know, meet new girl, you know, or meet a new guy. Oh, no, what should I do? And, you know, so I need to come up with a solution to that. And I need to direct my attention what God would have me be. And what God has told me to be is to be comfortable. I need to always be comfortable. If I'm in a situation like that, and if I'm not comfortable, don't do it. Right? Really don't do it. Okay, so, and then the other one was, oh, that was all of them. At the bottom of the page, it says, all men who have faith have courage. They trust their God. And you know what? 95% of fears that you have in your life that you deal with, about 5% you're not going to have a solution for. And you're really going to have to trust God, have faith, have courage, and do it anyways. Okay, so that's the second part. So the third part is the sex relationships. And this is just really simple stuff. This is just answering the questions. They asked us a bunch of questions. Where had we been selfish? Where had we been dishonest? We just answer them. But I, at the very bottom really tells me of the solution with our sex inventory. And it says, what should I have done instead? And what I have found is going through hundreds and hundreds of step fives and helping people through the steps. There is hope through this. And here's the four things that I have found. Everybody who tells me the same, I don't care if you're a girl or if you're a guy, if you're old, you're young, I listen to all kinds of step fives. This is what I hear from everybody, is that everybody, what should have I done instead? Need to be honest, communication, compromise, and comfortable. And that's the sex relationships. Now, I get a lot of counselors calling me because I go to a lot of treatment centers and And I try to help as many people as I can because I got such a great job where, you know, I work for just a short period of time and I'm out helping as many people as I can. I'm definitely on the front lines helping anyone, anywhere, at any time. I'll fly anywhere. I'll drive anywhere to help anybody. But that's getting a little bit into the other steps. But a lot of counselors have called me and they've had asked me about sex abuse, child abuse, and all of this, like sex abuse that happens to you. And they go like, what do you tell people and how do you deal with that? And how do they deal with it? Well, what I tell them is that you're not at fault for any of that. And you're not at fault. If you're a child, if you're a woman, if you're a guy, you're not at fault if that's ever happened to you. But I tell them this, but you are at fault in only one thing. And here's the only one thing that you're at fault for is holding on to that and not talking about it and dealing with that. That's the only part that you're at fault in, is that we need to talk about it, we need to deal with it, and hopefully you have a fantastic sponsor who can walk you through, you know, something like that. And that's what I tell them. So here's the last list in step 4. People we have hurt by our conduct. What happens is if you stole my iPhone, right, I'd be pissed off, right? But if I stole your iPhone, right, would I have a resentment towards you? Absolutely not. I wouldn't resent you, right? If I stole your iPhone, you'd be pissed off at me, but I wouldn't be pissed off at you. But this last list helps me with that. The people I've harmed. It not only helps me with all the resentments that I've been dying with, but it helps me what I've done to each and every one of you. So my list just grows a lot longer, right? I might not have a resentment towards you, but maybe I stole your iPhone. I need to fix the things that are broken. Let's go to, so then what happens is we do step 5, and we're in for a long talk. And this is where you get down to everything. And I've heard everything you can imagine when it comes to step 5. I've heard from the worst of the worst. And do you know what? Whatever secrets that you might have and you might be holding on to, do you know what? There's hope. And you need to know that there is hope. You have to know that there's hope. I've heard it all. You name it. People hurting people really, really badly, murdering people. I've heard it. I've dealt with it. Not me, but I've heard it. And do you know what? There is hope. And people change their lives in Alcoholics Anonymous. We change our lives. The steps help us change our lives. Like, unbelievable what happens to us. The worst of the worst that nobody's ever wanted us. You know, the murderers, the thieves, the really, really mean people, the drunks, the people who are crazy. The more worst off you are, the more Alcoholics Anonymous wants you and will love you. Like, that's fantastic. Great news. Okay, so then we get down to step 6 and 7. And step 6 and 7 is really, really simple. Step 6 is, by the time I get to step 6, because I've done my step 5, I've done the long talk, I've dealt with all of this stuff, but I have all these defects of character that I know about, because that's step 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. So step 6 is thinking about defects. I might be thinking about stealing your iPhone after the meeting. Do you get me? I'm thinking, oh, that's what I'm thinking, right? That's where step 6 comes in, because I'm thinking about doing something wrong and acting out on one of my defects. And when I actually act out on a defect, that's where step 7 kicks in and helps me. Humbly ask him to remove my shortcomings. Like, what else is left for you when you keep acting out on your defects of character? What's left other than prayer and action, positive action, and asking for God's help to help me fix this? And that's where step 7 comes in. Step 8 is done, of course, in my step 4. So I have this long list of people, and I have to be willing. Of course, I have to be willing to make amends to them all. I need to pray, and I need to be willing. Okay, so one thing I didn't mention is in step 4, when I get people to do step 4, I tell them to put their name at the very bottom of the list, and don't put it at the top. Put it at the bottom, because it'll just drive you crazy. You need to put you down on your step 4. You need to deal with the things that you need to talk about in your step 4. But we're over in step 8 and 9 now. So step 8 is having our list. So step 9 is the very first thing I need to do in step nine, 54 minutes. The very first thing I have to do in step nine is make amends, and I'm at that top of the list. And you have to be on the top of the list. How can I come to you and make amends to you? Why would you ask a sponsee or anybody to go up to somebody and say, like, you know, I'm wrong, you know, I want to fix this, if you don't even feel good about yourself? You need to make amends to you first. And I didn't know how to do that. I needed to know, how do I make amends to me? I needed help. And I didn't know what to do. And after doing these steps over and over and over again, I know God's will is better than anything I could have ever imagined, because I have my defects of character. And what I have to do in step six and seven is I need to do the opposite and ask for help and do the opposite. So if I'm stealing, I have to be giving. And if I'm really, really mean, I need to ask to be kind and generous to others. I need to live in God's will. But now I'm at step nine. I have my name on the list. I need to make amends to me. How do I be okay with me? I'm going to tell you how. As I needed to forgive me. I needed to forgive me. And what does that look like? You know, I've done the steps. I've done the work. But I needed to be okay with me. And the only way I could do that is by doing one thing and one thing only. And it came down to this. It's always reacting with love. That's how you forgive you. I don't care what any situation is in today's world. Is I need to react with love. That forgives me. Because I always reacted. I always reacted out of defects of character, like, oh, that person, or judging, or whatever the case might be. I need to live in love. I need to live in love. I need to give love. I need to react with love. And that's the forgiveness that I need for me before I can come and make amends to you. Because if I did something wrong, and I did, and if I need to fix it, I need to come from a place of the heart. I need to come from where there's love. And I need to come to you and say, like, look, I'm really wrong. I was wrong in what I did. Right? And the best amends you can ever make is not doing it anymore. And that's really, really hard to do. But that's what we have to do, is not repeat it anymore. We need to fix it. I need to react with love. I could go on with step nine. So, okay, now I get to step 10. Okay, how many minutes? Oh, good. 10? 15. Oh, beautiful, good. Okay, good. good. Okay, so now we're at step 10. And everybody, when it comes to step 10, it says continue to take personal inventory. When we were wrong, we promptly admit it. I don't know if you guys, of course you guys read it lots of times. But there's five things that I need to do in step 10. And this is continuous throughout the whole day. And I'm going to tell you what the five things are. But it's in the book, so I'm not pulling any surprises on you. Here's the first thing I have to do. Is I need to continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. That's the very first thing I need to do. If this crops up in my life, fear again, you know, resentment, any of this, selfishness or dishonesty. If this crops up, that's the very first thing. Uh-oh, I'm in trouble here. I need to go to the second thing. The second thing is when these crop up, we ask them once to remove them. So I need to pray about it. Oh my God, I'm feeling a little bit of fear in my life. God, help me. I'm feeling a little bit of fear. This number three is really good. And I put it as one, two, or three, but it's in the book, believe me. We discuss them with somebody immediately. So what happens is I get resentment. I pray about it. But this third thing, I don't always do. And if you don't do this, you're really going to find out what happens when you don't talk about it with somebody. And you really need to discuss them with somebody immediately. And number four, it says we make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. And number five is we resolutely turn our thoughts how I can help someone else. We do that all through the day. That's step 10, continue to take personal inventory. Okay, the army. The army is be all you can be. That's their code in the army. I'm guessing it is. Be all you can be, right? That's our code. And we got a code in AA, and I heard it mentioned even today. Love and tolerance of others is our code. We need to live this, people. We do. I need to live this. Love, there's that word again. Love and tolerance of others is our code. We got a code to live by. In AA, we got a code. Oh, love it, right? Love and tolerance of others is our code. See, we need to live this. And then it talks about we have a daily reprieve contingent. We have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day that we must carry the vision of God's will into our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. And do you know what? We do really have just a daily reprieve. Do you know what a reprieve is? A daily reprieve. A day of execution. That's a reprieve. You've been given a day of, you know, like a day of execution. Like unbelievable. So every day when you wake up, I don't know how you guys wake up, but I wake up very, very grateful. Right first thing in the morning. I've been given a day of sobriety. I've been given this day to go out and live it the best I can, the most loving I can, the most kind I can, the most caring I can. We've been given a daily reprieve all through the day. And they tell us what we do with it. Okay, then we get to step 11. Thought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. Okay, so now a lot of people will think, you know, they can think whatever they want, but step 11 is we have on the awakening and we have retire at night. This step is vital. Like step 11, believe it or not, they threw all the steps. See, Bill and Bob knew that we were going to screw this up. So they knew we were going to like bypass 4 and 5 and, you know, just skim away along the treads of the water. But what they did is they were really, really smart in giving us step 11. And you would think the most important part of step 11 is on the awakening. But it's not. In my own opinion, this is my opinion, you can have your own. And I'm going to tell you why. On the awakening is fantastic. I love it. I do it. It's fantastic. Gets me on track. And I love it. But what I tell people is the people who are really struggling and the people who aren't just really doing this all the time, and people who are like maybe missing meetings and, you know, you're starting to get resentments. And the very first thing I tell anybody is if you want to pull up your socks in Alcoholics Anonymous, and if you want to get right back on track right away, do When We Retire at Night. And they ask us 9 questions. And I'm just going to go through the 9 questions. And it's in the book. Okay, number one. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? 2, do we owe apology? 3, have we kept something to ourselves which we discussed with another person at once? 4, were we kind, loving towards all? 5, what could have I done better? 6, were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? 7, or were we thinking of what we could do for others or what we could pack into the stream of life? 8, but we must not be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, morbid reflection, for we would diminish our usefulness to others. 9, after making review of, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire the corrective measures should be taken. When you retire at night, I tell every person I go through the steps with is you need to print this out. You need to print that out. You need to do these 9 things at night if you want to live a happy, sober, with sobriety life and stay on track. You need to do When I Retire at Night. And then that brings us down to the 12th step. And the 12th step is giving this to others. Right? I've been given this gift. Again, I've been given this gift of sobriety. And, you know, who am I to hold on to this? And not only do I give it, I give it freely and a lot. Do you know? And, you know, I was just even talking about it today. Is, you know, some of the people I get are really, really, I think we all get the really, really hardcore cases here. And, you know, and what should we do? You know, what should we do? How can we do it? We need to love them. That's the very first thing we can do with any alcoholic is we need to love them. We always need to react with love. We need to love them. But we need to help them also. And how I help them today is by going through the steps. Right? If you want to transform your thinking and your life into an amazing journey each and every second of every day, get into the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Get into that big book. You know, it completely changed my life. And, you know, I just can't thank, you know, the committee, Derek. Derek's gone out of his way for the last couple of days and his kids and you know, everybody, even everybody from the committee that just went out of their way to welcome me here. And Rhonda, talking to Rhonda all the time on Facebook, and Beverly and Peggy, I think it's Peggy too. And you know, to invite a guy like me, and you know, I'm nobody special. I'm just like you. I'm exactly like you. I'm no better. I'm no worse than you. You know, and we can do this together, and we can like lean on each other. And that's the theme. And Beverly bought me a purple socks, and I got purple. Purple is the theme of this roundup. And I want to thank Beverly for buying me purple socks. If I can help anybody, if I can help anybody at any time, please see me after the conference, and I'm willing to give you my phone number. I'm willing to help you. I'm willing to help your friends, your loved ones, with any way I can possible. I'll go out of my way. And if you know anybody in Vancouver, or you know maybe any parts of the world near there, I'm willing to help them too. And with that, you know, I just want to thank you all for my sobriety. Thank you. Thank you.